Hello, and welcome to the Retirement Repair Shop. I'm your host, Mary Beth Franklin. This podcast series focuses on retirement challenges and ways to get your financial plans back on track. Today, and throughout this second season of the Retirement Repair Shop, we will be talking about the coronavirus pandemic and its impact on our lives, our economy, and our finances. With me today is Steve Sweeney. Steve is Director of Advanced Markets for Transamerica. He's a certified financial planner and a retirement income certified professional. During his 15 years of financial services experience, Steve has focused on long-term care issues, growth and protection strategies, and has had extensive experience with small business owners. Even during a global pandemic and public health crisis, life goes on. Whether it's a joyous occasion, such as a marriage or a new baby, or a difficult one, such as death of a loved one or a divorce, financial advisors are poised to help their clients align their financial goals with their current situation. This episode of the Retirement Repair Shop will address some of those life transitions and various solutions for handling each one. The theme of this podcast is adapting plans to new circumstances. Steve, welcome to the Retirement Repair Shop podcast. You have so much experience in so many different areas, I hardly know where to begin. But let's start with small business owners. We know that small businesses are the heart of the economy and the sector most affected by the nationwide lockdown that is beginning to ease in some parts of the country. How is your Advanced Market Group guiding advisors as they try to help their small business owners through this once-in-a-lifetime economic crisis?
Thanks very much for having me, Mary Beth. The focus of our team has always been to leverage the fundamental principles of financial planning to help financial professionals add meaningful value to the experience they offer their clients. And this means that we routinely engage with advisors over the technical aspects of topics such as investment management, tax efficiency, retirement strategies, and insurance. And while there are a few new elements to these conversations, like navigating the labyrinth of government-funded stimulus packages, in many ways, the core components of sound financial advice remains the same. And this is particularly true when it comes to working with small business owners, even in this new normal that we face. As a practical matter, though, we also have to acknowledge that most small business owners have a lot on their plates right now, perhaps even more than before. So it's with that in mind that we encourage financial professionals to be proactive, but also patient. So, you know, reaching out to their small business owner clients and really all clients for that matter, to let them know that you're there as a resource and ready to help at a moment's notice can make all the difference in the world.
You're right. That's a fine line for financial advisors. You want to appear supportive to the clients, but as you mentioned, small business owners particularly have a lot of things on their mind. So probably the last thing is, oh, it's my advisor. I hope he's not pitching me something new. Talk about how financial advisors can help adapt to this new environment, particularly for small business owners. Can you have case studies, examples of what they're doing?
As we've pointed out here, I think the key word is adapt. Many of the top professionals, financial professionals that we work with are adapting in ways and perhaps they never thought they would. In some cases, this means using technology to host client meetings. Mm-hmm. In other cases, it might mean on a more technical level, understanding some of the new rules as it relates to reversing RMDs that are now not required here in 2020. But at the end of the day, we believe it's important to remember that not every conversation, as you point out, is about pitching a new idea or solution. And advisors who create the best experience for their clients will be authentic in their willingness to help and go into every discussion with an open mind. And it's there that patience might be key as well. It might also require some advisors to step outside their comfort zones and learn new skills. And we believe that using resources like our advanced markets teams and others can play a pivotal role there. So let me give you for instance on that as well. So part of our responsibility on the Transamerica Advanced Markets team is to assist financial professionals with what we would call ad hoc client scenarios and answer questions along the way there. So 2 weeks ago, I received a call from one of our top financial professionals who often incorporates our mutual funds into his recommendations. The focus of his practice has typically been on a retirement plan investment management. But through the course of proactively connecting with one of his top clients who was a small business owner, he discovered that that client was going to be retiring a little bit earlier than expected. And he was going to be looking at rolling his solo 401k into an IRA. And then subsequently, because he was already full retirement age, turning on his Social Security benefit. And while this advisor was not an expert himself in Social Security, our team was able to partner up here and provide some information that allowed that advisor to assist his client in making an informed filing strategy as it relates to Social Security. And it meant, in this case, turning on the spouse's benefit and allowing his to accrue delayed retirement credits and so forth. But, you know, that specifics of the scenario, I don't think is the point here. I think the point is actually that this example really shows that, you know, when advisors have an open mind and get outside their comfort zone, they can ultimately discover new ways to help clients meet their objectives.
You know, I think that's such a valid point that advisors don't need to be experts in every single area, but they do need to be like a financial quarterback, that they know the resources to go to when they are outside of their area of expertise. As in this case, someone who's primarily an investment manager, but as their client is saying, hey, I've got to make some retirement decisions that's not just about investing. What do I do about Social Security? What do I do about Medicare? Well, maybe he's not an expert, but somebody on your team probably is.
That's exactly how we hope to help.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Medicare, one of the big issues during this pandemic and subsequent economic crisis is a lot of people are losing jobs, particularly older workers, maybe people 65 plus, who have continued to work and have continued to have access to their employer health insurance. Maybe they lose a job and they have a lot of questions. Are you dealing with health insurance and Medicare issues?
Absolutely. There are a lot of questions as it relates to planning for the financial implications of healthcare. And I would say that point has been amplified during these times. As certainly as the pandemic has moved to the forefront in our country, that's been the case. If some of the more common questions are related to, you know, things like what are the eligible expenses under health savings accounts, and when can workers and their non-working spouses perhaps qualify for coverage under Medicare as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a big area. I'm curious. Retiree healthcare costs and benefits is something that I talk a lot with my audience and I write about. And I get the impression that in theory, a lot of advisors say, yeah, that's really important. But technically, it's a difficult topic to deal with. Are you finding renewed interest in this as a topic? And what kind of resources are you offering advisors?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, you know, as the old saying goes, and our take on this is pretty fundamental as well. You know, the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Okay. I think that in this case, that's absolutely relevant, and maybe adjust that to say that an ounce of preparation is worth that pound of cure. And for those that are eligible, you know, I think that funding health savings account is so important. And, you know, obviously losing a job is traumatic in a number of ways, and that can't be overstated. But, you know, a big part of that is understanding what happens when you lose employer-provided healthcare coverage, right? That's the system that we're generally a part of. And those that were able to fund health savings accounts along the way, to remember as financial advisors that our clients are still able to maintain those account balances even after they lose their jobs. And while you can't contribute to those accounts if you're not part of a high deductible health insurance plan, those residual balances can be crucial in bridging the gap to the next employer-provided health insurance plan, either by way of paying COBRA premiums or any other eligible out-of-pocket healthcare expenses that may be incurred in the meantime. But again, it starts with preparing for that potentiality of higher healthcare expenses or losing coverage altogether.
Right. And I think we're going to see a renewed appreciation for health savings accounts, which up to now have been talked about in the financial services arena as, oh, a great additional tax dodge, excuse me for using a pejorative, but the idea that I get a triple tax break. I get, as long as I have a high deductible consumer health plan, that I can make contributions up to a certain limit that are tax deductible. The money grows tax deferred. And as long as it's spent on medical expenses, the money comes out tax free. So tax break, tax break, tax break. And one could see if I've lost my job and if I'm under Medicare age, the idea of continuing my existing group health insurance that my employer had provided under COBRA, it lets me continue that group plan. The shock to so many recently unemployed people is, oh, but I have to pay 100% of the cost. Technically, I have to pay 102% of the cost of that coverage. But if I have HSA money, I can use that money to pay for those premiums, correct?
Absolutely. Yes.
And another thing to talk about with COBRA is now if you're dealing with a client who's an older worker, 65 plus, there's a possible trap there that people can get caught in because COBRA coverage continues for up to 18 months. But if I'm 65 plus and eligible for Medicare, I only have 8 months between the time my employer coverage ends to sign up for Medicare Part B penalty free, and COBRA does not count as credible insurance as far as Medicare goes.
Absolutely. Very common question that pops up.
You also mentioned what happens if you have spouses of different ages, which is often the case. Maybe the husband who had the coverage is 65 plus, he lost the job, he can go on Medicare. What do you recommend if maybe the spouse is 62, 63? What does that spouse do?
Yeah, there are a lot of challenges in that fact pattern that you describe as well, Mary Beth. And I think that, you know, perhaps more broadly, but the first thing to understand with Medicare is that it doesn't cover everything. There are going to be out-of-pocket expenses that really must be planned for, even with the most robust Medicare plan. And, you know, while you can no longer contribute to health savings accounts while you're enrolled in Medicare, residual account balances can play an important role in being able to offset some of those expenses, whether it's for a spouse that's not eligible for Medicare based on their age picking up other COBRA premiums or what have you. So there are a lot of advantages in doing so. But Medicare beneficiaries also need to be sure that they're enrolling on time, as you point out. And so for most people who are securing their health insurance after 65, that of course means that special enrollment period, which is within 8 months. But as you point out, not getting enrolled in time can lead to costly penalties that last for the lifetime of your Part B premiums. Mm-hmm. Additionally, you know, Medicare enrollees need to embrace that idea that due diligence regarding these rules and the plan design is really now their responsibility. It's up to them to continue to review those plans and understand what they have and make sure they're compliant, but also on an annual basis as open enrollment periods pop up as well. And this may be somewhat of a departure for some retirees who were previously relying on their employer to provide their coverage. But again, a little bit of due diligence can go a long way. And as you point out, that common scenario where you have spouses of different ages, you know, that non-working spouse who might be a little bit younger is eligible for Medicare based on the working spouse's employment history. However, they still have to be 65, and we can't forget about that. And advisors are uniquely positioned to be able to bring those types of issues to light.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that retirees may be in this brave new world of having to pick health benefits, but I guess advisors are also stretching their comfort zone. They probably didn't deal with health insurance issues before. Do you see the pandemic sort of changing the way advisors will be planning going forward, becoming more holistic?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that, you know, when you look at that holistic type of planning and one of the, you know, things that people, advisors look at is the average cost of healthcare for the average 65-year-old couple today. And as you point out, it's been talked about quite a bit. But now I think more than ever, given the pandemic and a lot of people being forced to retire in some instances, it's become essential to the planning process, even more so than before.
Another essential planning topic that people like to avoid because it's hard is long-term care costs and planning. And, you know, certainly one of the most dire aspects of this pandemic has been the way that the coronavirus has ravaged long-term care facilities like nursing homes and assisted living. I'm just curious, do you think people may start thinking about this topic of, I definitely don't want to go to a nursing home. I want to make sure I am able to choose where I receive care if I ever need it, but how do I pay for it? What does this do to long-term care discussions?
Yes, absolutely. So long-term care and the facilities that provide those types of services have been getting a lot of attention recently. I would agree. And unfortunately, much of it has had to do with some of the grim circumstances that the residents and many of the, you know, truly heroic doctors, nurses, and other staff that are helping them are facing. However, if there is a silver lining, this attention has shined a light on a decision that many put off until it's too late. And what I mean by that is that, you know, most people are adamant, as you point out, about staying home if they need long-term care. Yet this has notoriously been one of those areas of our business where clients and advisors alike really procrastinate and ultimately lose some freedom of choice. So to answer your question more directly, there has absolutely been an uptick, if you will, in interest in some of the solutions that may enhance the degree of choice that clients have when they're facing the potential of succumbing to the loss of activities of daily living. Some examples are, of course, a standalone long-term care policy. Those have become top of mind for many. And in the case of small business owners and some individuals, the prospect of certain tax efficiencies with those standalone long-term care programs have been attractive as well. In addition to that, I would say that there's absolutely been some additional attention being paid to some life insurance and annuity solutions that combine an income and cash accumulation feature with some sort of long-term care benefit as well.
Let's go through those options step by step and see what the current situation is. All right, wow, long-term care insurance, maybe that sounds like an option for me. Who is a candidate based on age and health? And in today's economic environment, we've seen so many standalone policies disappear. What's the universe for standalone policies right now? Who should consider it? Who can get it?
Right. So, you know, the first thing to understand with long-term care insurance and standalone policies in particular is that there are underwriting requirements that go along with that. So unfortunately, those that have dealt with significant health issues in the past may be precluded or from coverage altogether or have increased premiums associated with that. But another thing to consider there is that there are other solutions, even if that's the case. And that might come in the form of an annuity with an enhancement to an income feature that allows for additional income to be paid in the event of needing long-term care services. Mm-hmm. And those types of solutions don't have the same underwriting requirements that a standalone policy might. So, you know, there are options. But here again, I think that working with an advisor who's proficient in all these different areas, taking a holistic approach is so key and ultimately is what enhances that client experience that they're trying to develop.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's assume long-term care insurance standalone policy is not an option for me. You've mentioned both annuities and life insurance that would have some sort of living benefit rider. How does an advisor explain the pros and cons of each, and who's the likely client that would benefit from each scenario?
Right. So, you know, the client fact patterns are going to vary significantly, but I think that, you know, the sweet spot, if you will, is going to be that 50 to 60 year old range. Folks who are healthy enough to secure the coverage would perhaps look a little more closely at a long-term care standalone policy. But then on the flip side, if they're not able to secure that coverage due to some underwriting history or what have you, or outside of that range, one solution might be to look a little closer at the annuity income enhancement that would, again, increase their benefit, depending on at what point they turn on their benefit and at what point they are eligible for the enhancement based on their need for the long-term care. So it is a really dynamic decision, ultimately, and is something that advisors need to work on a case-by-case basis.
Right.
But the sweet spot, again, for evaluating this is, if we were to point at an age range, I would say 50 to 60 to get started, but it's not limited to that either. But the key would be, you know, before some of those problems related to underwriting or needing the coverage to kick in happening in the first place.
Right. It would seem that maybe I'm outside that 50 to 60 window. Maybe I'm 65, mm-hmm. maybe even 70. It would seem that probably long-term care insurance standalone might be not available to me or too expensive if it was. I noticed because of the very low interest rate environment now that a lot of life insurers are cracking down on who they are issuing policies to. And a lot of people 70 plus who might want to buy life insurance either for estate planning purposes or with that added benefit of being able to use a living benefit rider for long-term care insurance may want to look at the annuity route instead, that here's one way to take an asset, turn it into an income stream that could be designated for long-term care if I need it. Is that an appropriate putting people in the right boxes?
Absolutely. Categorizing in that way, going into the conversation, it can certainly be beneficial. I would just encourage advisors to continue to have an open mind as well and not consider that box to be airtight, right? Mm-hmm. Which we can certainly work outside those age ranges as well. But absolutely worth considering in that regard.
And let's circle back to the idea of small business owners. You mentioned the tax advantage, perhaps, of buying some sort of long-term care protection as a small business owner. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the first thing to understand is that long-term care receives a very preferential tax treatment for business owners who are providing coverage for themselves and or their spouses, but also as a benefit to employees. So it's treated much the same way health insurance is when it's being provided to employees in most cases, where you can write off the premium as a benefit that's being provided to employees, and then the employee in that instance is able to receive benefit from the policy tax free as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And for those sole proprietors or businesses that are business owners that are establishing the policy and the coverage for themselves, there are certain deductions that are available based on how old they are when the policy is in force. So the amount that you can deduct is based on your age, and there's guidance that the IRS provides, specific guidance that provides us with exactly what those write-offs can be based on those particular ages.
I know one of the concerns in the past about buying long-term care insurance was that, gee, there was no guarantee my premium wasn't going to keep going up and up and up. That's one option for small business owners, right? That they could buy a fully paid for policy, or maybe a 5-pay or 10-pay, to take away some of the concerns about future premium increases.
So with standalone policies, unfortunately, those are a lot more limited at this point as far as being paid up. Mm-hmm. But the alternative to that might be taking a closer look at that annuity solution that would have a feature added to an income benefit.
Well, you've certainly given advisors lots of fodder for conversations with clients and multiple solutions that they could tailor for specific clients. Now, unfortunately, as a result of the pandemic, a lot of advisors have lost some of their clients, particularly elderly clients. And we're in this situation where they can't go to the funeral. They can't hold their hand. Are you talking to advisors of how they're reaching out to make that connection with remaining family members and taking care of the necessary business of cleaning up an estate or legacy planning?
Absolutely. That's unfortunately an all too common scenario, but one that financial professionals, you know, have to be prepared for whether there's a pandemic or not. And we believe that, you know, there's a case to be made for, you know, doing a lot of the work well in advance of the client actually needing the assistance. And it's just, you know, one more reason to really listen to clients, take that holistic approach, and then be prepared to help when and where you can. And so, you know, developing a process that fits with the financial advisor's practice, whereby you're organized and prepared to address these types of challenges that clients will inevitably face, can make all the difference in the world, yet again. And understand that there's really no playbook for addressing these life events of a loved one. But being prepared and encouraging clients to review estate planning documents well in advance of, you know, losing a loved one or losing, you know, the ability to make decisions on one's own behalf or whatever the case may be, again, makes all the difference in the world. And utilizing available resources like the checklist that we have at Transamerica and other parts of a financial professional's professional network can really go a long way in developing that process that can help the client feel secure in their time of need.
Talk to me a little bit about the way you're hearing from advisors of how they're using technology like e-signature or Zoom meetings with clients, and whether you think this is going to forever change the way advisors do their job.
Yeah. So, answer the last question first. I think that there's no doubt that this has changed the way that advisors interact with clients, and that is likely to stay, at least for the foreseeable future. Some of the more fun things that I've heard and even been a part of myself are things like Zoom client happy hours, where advisors are hosting events and we can, you know, offer up conversations related to issues that are still important to clients, like planning for Medicare or dealing with elder fraud scenarios, and encourage clients to, you know, have a drink and sit there with their loved ones and enjoy a interaction, if only virtually. Again, are some of the more fun ways that we've been a part of helping advisors enhance that client experience. But again, it's very likely to remain, at least for the foreseeable future, and will have an impact long-term on the way we interact with clients.
I was doing one of these virtual events, a Woman Advisor Summit a couple weeks ago, and many of those female advisors were talking about how it was changing their practice for the better. One example being, it was often very difficult to get a husband and wife to agree to a time to come into a in-person meeting because somebody was picking up the kids, somebody was at work. Now everybody's stuck at home together. So they're able to get two spouses, at least in the same room on the same screen at the same time. So they're engaging both spouses. And there were some great ideas that this one advisor shared. She said, I'm stuck at home with four teenagers, and I figured a lot of my clients are probably too. So she sent out an email to her client saying, hey, do you have any high school students at home? I'm going to do a half hour on, you know, how to run a business. And she had 19 families sign on, and she said only 16 were clients. Three were friends of clients. Right there, she had three prospects just from this educational, you know, how do you set up a lemonade stand kind of thing. She did the same thing. Do you have any college students at home? Let's talk about accepting that first job offer. And she just went through, how much would it cost you to get an apartment, to get cable, to, you know, have the pay back your student loans, to pay for your car loans, and then adding it up and saying, hey, that first job better pay you $75,000 a year or you're staying at home. So I think it's wonderfully creative what people were able to do. Certainly, we couldn't have done this 10 years ago without this kind of technology. But it seems that advisors who are willing to adapt, this should be a great time for the financial profession because they probably have prospective clients reaching out to them for help. Any thoughts on how advisors can widen their net and help more people?
Absolutely. So I think that, you know, you make so many good points in your statements there. But that key word of adapting keeps coming up, right? It's going to feel a little bit different. It's going to look a little bit different early on, but we adjust and we move forward and we continue to offer up those fundamental principles of financial guidance in general that are still so valuable. And it might not be the same as, you know, we're used to where we're, you know, just offering investment guidance or risk management advice. But at the end of the day, this stuff is still so valuable. We just have to find new ways to interact with clients. And those are great examples of also then too, the client or the advisor, perhaps getting a little bit outside their comfort zone as well. But, you know, really offering up new ways to enhance that client experience. And I think that, you know, you make an excellent point too about that next generation. One of the challenges that financial professionals face and what as an industry we've faced for a long time is bridging the gap to the next generation. This could be a great way to do that. You know, host a whole family on that Zoom meeting, perhaps, to have a conversation about estate planning objectives or what that wealth transfer might look like. That's certainly going to be beneficial for the longevity of the financial advisor's practice as well. And it comes down to, again, adapting and getting outside our comfort zone, but still focusing on the core components of what we have to offer as financial professionals.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end this wonderful conversation on a high note. So, Steve, thanks so much for being my guest today on the Retirement Repair Shop. Hey! I appreciate you sharing your insights and guidance on how advisors can help their clients confront the many financial challenges they're facing now and how those advisors can adapt their business to the new normal. Thanks again, Steve.
Thank you, Mary Beth.
If you have a story you'd like to share about a retirement hurdle you're facing, or if you have a question that you'd like to ask one of our experts, contact us here at the Retirement Repair Shop. That's investmentnews.com/repair shop. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcast, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher so you never miss an episode. A big thanks to Transamerica for making this episode possible. With a history that dates back more than 100 years, Transamerica is recognized as a leading provider of life insurance, retirement, and investment solutions, serving millions of customers throughout the United States. Recognizing the necessity of health and wellness during peak working life, Transamerica's dedicated professionals work to help people take the steps necessary to live better today so they can worry less about tomorrow. Transamerica serves nearly every customer segment, providing a broad range of quality life insurance and investment products, individual and group pension plans, as well as asset management services. For more information, please visit www.transamerica.com.
Transamerica Resources, Inc. is an Aegon company and is affiliated with various companies which include, but are not limited to, insurance companies and broker-dealers. Transamerica Resources, Inc. does not offer insurance products or securities. The information provided is for educational purposes only and should not be construed as insurance, securities, ERISA, tax, investment, legal, medical, or financial advice or guidance. Please consult your personal independent professionals for answers to your specific questions. Investments are subject to market risk, including the loss of principal. Investment strategies described may not be suitable for all investors and should not be construed as investment advice or recommendations for the purchase or sale of any security. Past performance does not guarantee future results.